This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Childhood vaccinations have clearly saved lives, both here and throughout the world, protecting children from serious and life-threatening diseases. But while overall immunization rates have been high in this country, there remain some groups for which this is not the case. And here to tell us more about this and what can be done about it are Dr. Joseph Domokowski, professor of pediatrics as well as of microbiology and immunology, and Dr. Monica Suryadevara, assistant professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in. Dr. Domokowski, there are groups of kids who are under-vaccinated in this country. Tell us who they are.
Well, there are several different groups. We have groups of culturally sort of resistant.
Who basically refuse to have their kids vaccinated on religious grounds?
Religious or cultural grounds.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what do we do about that? What do you think is causing this? Besides, if it's a belief system, I understand, but there have been of late kind of trends of parents who feel like there's something in the vaccine that could be hazardous to their kids.
So I see those as an even separate group. I see those as philosophical sort of exemptors, people that for whatever reason have decided that the vaccines are either safe or unnecessary for their kids. And when I talk to those families, they have a lot of different reasons that they tell me.
Isn't there a problem with this in terms of the whole herd immunity concept? In other words, if a lot of people opt out of vaccinating their children for whatever grounds, doesn't it affect all of us?
Well, we've proven that it affects all of us because we've experienced very recent outbreaks of vaccine-preventable infections.
Why do you think some of these people, I know that there's been this issue of autism, but I think it's been postulated that perhaps parents have not experienced, that generation has not experienced the devastation that some of these really serious diseases like polio, for example, could cause.
Agreed. I think not too long ago, we at least had the help of the grandparents that could remind the new parents about what these infections really were. And, we've gotten so far away from many of these vaccine-preventable diseases, at least as major problems, public health problems, that even grandparents now, new grandparents, don't remember what those were, so they can't help educate their kids. So as providers, it's our duty to remind people about what those infections can
do. And are you having any success with convincing people?
Well, it depends on the rationale that the parents are giving us for not vaccinating. If they need information and education, we can get them to vaccinate their kids every time. But if they give us sort of philosophical reasons that we can't understand and we don't share that same philosophy, those are the more resistant families.
So it continues. It's something that's really hard to combat. How about HPV? I know you were on the show not too long ago. We were talking about the new recommendation for boys as well as girls to be vaccinated for human papillomavirus and the potential for the diseases it can cause.
Right. When the HPV vaccines were first approved back in 2006, we were only vaccinating females. But in 2011, the vaccine recommendation was expanded to include boys and young men. And we still see a discrepancy between the percentage of young females and young boys, young males that are vaccinated.
And what's the potential problem with that? With under-vaccinating that population?
Well, again, this is a transmittable virus, and that transmittable virus can infect both boys and girls, and once they have experienced behavior that allows transmission, they can spread that virus. That HPV virus, as we talked about last time, is a cancer-causing infection.
I think that's the key, that it really can cause cancer, and this is one way to really prevent it in advance. Dr. Suryadevara, poor kids are not getting vaccinated.
Right. The kids who don't have money or access to resources aren't getting vaccinated. And
right.
There are two separate reasons why that may be the case. One is access to a vaccine. A lot of families have trouble finding transportation to get to their doctor's office or can't take time off from work. And those kids aren't even able to access the vaccine. And there's another group where the family isn't educated enough or doesn't know enough about the vaccines and either doesn't know that the vaccine is recommended for their child or is concerned that there are safety issues with the vaccine.
And this clearly just adds to that whole concern for the fact that all of those kids, for whatever the reason, are also not getting their full vaccinations.
Correct.
And also, does that affect or potentially affect our herd immunity, so to speak, or the rest of us?
Correct. You have a whole community of children who aren't getting vaccinated either for access reasons or for education reasons, decreasing herd immunity in the community.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Drs. Domokowski and Surya Devera. And we are talking about the need to improve immunization rates in some children in this country. So as you said, these kids who are impoverished are not getting vaccinated properly. You recently published a study on that. Tell us about it.
Yes. So what we found looking in previous studies is that the two main reasons why impoverished children aren't getting vaccinated is lack of access to vaccine and lack of education about vaccine. So we wanted to develop a program to improve both access and education to vaccine.
So what did you do?
So we met families at the Salvation Army who are accessing this community-based organization for non-medical reasons. They were registering for a gift distribution program for their families, and we thought that'd be a great way to access a large number of families with impoverished children.
That's very clever, actually. When you say we did it, tell us a little bit more about your team.
Being the study team, which involved two pediatric infectious disease specialists and a health educator, and multiple medical students who helped administer vaccines.
Okay, so after you contacted Salvation Army in this case, what did you do?
We met. We attended the gift distribution registration. It was a two-week period. Happened at different sites around Syracuse. And we talked to families individually. We met each family individually. We asked them questions regarding their understanding of routine pediatric vaccines, what their beliefs of the safety and efficacy were of the vaccines, whether they themselves got vaccinated, what they thought of each individual vaccine, including flu vaccine. And then after we collected this information, we accessed their child's immunization records in the computer to determine whether their child was vaccine complete or vaccine delayed based upon recent recommendations.
So your goal was really to improve the vaccination rates, but what was the study? In other words, what were you attempting to study?
So our study was, if we educate the families, will that increase their child's vaccination rate? So after we collected our survey information and compared that with the immunization records, we were able to address each family's individual concern regarding vaccine, educate them as to what vaccine the child was due for, and how to go about getting those child vaccinations.
Now, we mentioned earlier the other populations who are not getting vaccinated for other reasons. Did you find some of the same objections when you were interviewing these lower-income families?
There were a few families who had some philosophical exemptions. However, the majority of the families were able to be educated, and once they understood the reasons for the vaccine recommendations, they were more likely to have their child vaccinated.
So basically, your point of access or your contact point was through the Salvation Army gift program.
Correct.
And then you identified the families. You engaged in some educational programming. You found out which of their children were not being adequately vaccinated, and then what?
And then we offered on-site influenza vaccine and pneumococcal vaccine to those eligible. The pneumococcal vaccine was for the children who were less than six, and the influenza vaccine was for any child as well as any family member to show that we really believed in influenza and pneumococcal vaccine in particular.
Yeah, why those two?
It was in the middle of influenza season, so it was a perfect time to offer vaccine to a community who otherwise would have a harder time accessing vaccine. And pneumococcal vaccine also has been shown to have reduced uptake in this particular population.
So they were also not getting that kind of vaccine.
Much,
and is that also crucial in terms of
correct.
Preventing
as
pneumonia?
As pneumococcus is the most common bacterial cause of pneumonia, ear infections, sinus infections.
So in a sense, what did you find?
So what we found was, prior to our educational intervention, only 28% of the children were completely vaccinated.
In other words, they'd had their full range
full
of childhood
vaccinations.
Full
everything that the ACIP recommended they had completed.
ACIP.
And, yep. The
American Academy? No.
It's the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices.
Oh, okay.
That's the group that puts out the recommendations for
okay.
the vaccine.
Yes, and?
And the reason why it was only 28% who are vaccine complete was because of the lack of influenza vaccine. When you took out influenza vaccine, 70% of the children had completed all the other vaccines. So what that showed us is that the reason why a lot of children are vaccine delayed is because they're not getting their influenza vaccine.
So that seems to be the culprit more than anything. It's interesting because now it's being offered so widely at supermarkets and drugstores as well as doctor's offices. Do you think that's it is making a difference or will make a difference?
When you go to supermarkets and drug offices and non-medical practices, those are mostly for adults. So it's harder to find places for children to get vaccinated. You have to schedule an appointment at the doctor's office. If you have multiple children in your family, they may make you come on to separate days. So I found that access to flu vaccine for the children was one big reason why kids didn't get vaccinated. The second reason was because a lot of families are concerned that if children are getting the flu vaccine, we're giving them the flu, and that it's just going to make them sick. That was the most common reason for parents to decline flu vaccine.
So that was another issue of education.
Correct. And so as we educated the families, they became more willing to get their children to receive the flu vaccine.
So in summary, what did you find?
We found that providing vaccine access for the families at a place where they're already accessing other services in combination with individual education to help them understand more about vaccine safety and efficacy was effective in increasing immunization rates in this community, particularly with the flu vaccine.
So basically, education and access made the difference with that population. Dr. Demichelski, how do you see that factor, those two factors perhaps affecting other parts? First of all, how does that compare to other parts of the country?
Well, first of all, our observation here impressed us so much that we decided to continue to do this each year. So the collaboration's fantastic. So we're going to continue this as we go forward.
With the Salvation Army or with other not-for-profit?
With the Salvation Army, because they are among the largest, at least for accessing the children.
Here in Central New York.
Yeah. And I would hope that after reading our pediatrics manuscript, our published research, that other areas of the country.
What journal could we find that in?
It's in Pediatrics in August of 2013. It was published just last month.
And you're hoping that after people read it?
Yeah, we're hoping that as other people that are interested in vaccine delivery and utilization of vaccines across
the country. In underserved
populations. That they can use this model and either expand it with the Salvation Army or other community-based organizations to allow better delivery of some of these vaccines.
So basically what you're saying is if we can partner with organizations throughout the country, these kinds of organizations, that we might be able to really reduce or improve the level of vaccination of children in this country on the whole. That's what you're seeing. This is a model that you could use in that regard.
It won't solve the whole problem, but it's one of the steps toward a solution. Yep.
Very, very good. Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been very, very interesting information, very wonderful research, and it's led to some further program that you're going to offer to our community where everyone will benefit, and hopefully maybe even throughout the country people will pick up on this idea. My guests have been Dr. Joseph Domikowski, Professor of Pediatrics as well as Microbiology and Immunology, and Dr. Monica Surya-Devera, the Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.